You've seen the headlines. Bonds are making a comeback. But if you've ever tried to invest in bonds, you know what a clunky, complicated, broken experience it can be. That's why at Public, they took fixed income and fixed it. Now you can find, evaluate, and buy thousands of bonds with an investing experience designed this century. Add fixed income to your portfolio with corporate, treasury, and municipal bonds. Go to public.com/bondspodcast to get started. This podcast is sponsored by Public. Full disclosures can be found at public.com/bonds. Chat with Traders is sponsored by Trade the Pool. Are concerns about limited buying power, insufficient capital, or fear of losing your own money preventing you from advancing your trading capabilities? Trade the Pool is an online stock trading prop firm that offers funding for stock traders. Demonstrate your skills, trade their capital, and keep your profits. You can engage in intraday trading and now swing trading on Trade the Pool with any U.S. stock or ETF. The procedure is straightforward. Pay an evaluation fee, successfully complete the evaluation, and get funded. Visit tradethepool.com/chat to learn more.
Markets, speculation, and risk. This is the Chat with Traders podcast.
This is episode 244 on Chat with Traders. Hey there, listeners. This is one of those announcement episodes, a little break from our normal programming. As I mentioned a couple of episodes ago, back on episode 242, we have a new host joining me on Chat with Traders, and I'm so excited to finally be able to share a little bit more about him today. His name is Ian Cox from Seattle, Washington. He's been trading since the 90s, has attained success in trading, which afforded him financial and more time freedom. He's passionate about the financial markets, still trades stocks, and very much into crypto. He continues to stay curious, continues to learn and grow, even as a veteran trader. We're doing things a little bit different here on this specific episode, where you're going to learn more about Ian right off the bat through an interview I did with him not too long ago. It was around late April, early May timeframe of this year, and it aired on a trading-related podcast that I started earlier in the year called Affirmations for Traders podcast. I was so grateful that he was willing to come onto that show and open up and share about his trading background and strategies, successes and failures, the whole shebang. So I'm bringing it to you again here for those who want to know more about Ian Cox, who is joining me as a new host on Chat with Traders. And you will actually get to hear more from Ian himself, starting on episode 245, where he interviews a contrarian trader. We can't wait to introduce our newest guest on that episode as well, which will come out a week from today. So you don't want to miss it. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy the interview I had with Ian. Slightly more of a conversational style interview than you're used to, but nevertheless, I hope you gain some insights from it as well. And most of all, welcome our new host, Ian Cox. How did you get started in trading?
Yeah, how to get started in trading. Right around the start of the internet back in 1995, 1996, it was a very quick and convenient way to look at stocks and dive into looking at company fundamentals and message boards. And I became addicted very quickly. So it's been over 25 years ago.
And so that was during a time, a pretty challenging time during the dot-com days, or?
Yeah, it was just at the start of the dot-com days. Mid-90s, 95, 96. Got a job with a software company and over near Seattle. And I had plenty of time during the day to look at stocks and when I wasn't working. So quickly got into technical analysis and looking at company fundamentals and reading the message boards and then started the trading. It was very addicting.
Yeah. And so if you don't mind me asking, maybe you can give the listeners an idea of, your best moments of the trading back then. And in general, what contributed to the success of your trading?
Well, the success came usually as a result of many painful lessons of greed, mismanagement, and watching the markets, studying sectors, I should say, and getting to know all the companies within that sector and learning kind of how they trade and what have you. So best moments, of course, is ostensibly is when you make lots of money. But but the problem with that, if you don't manage your greed, you don't manage your emotions, you get to get overconfident very quickly. And that just sets you up for a bigger fall later on if you don't maintain discipline, if you don't maintain a trading plan. The best moments is when I incorporated the painful lessons that I had learned along the way and achieved very profitable trades throughout time by being very patient, applying my strategies, and having them come to fruition. That was more satisfying than the quick junk food fix of a quick, quick profits.
Yeah. And you mentioned strategies. How did you come up with your strategy? Was it through years and years of trial and error? Or how did you finally pick the strategy that contributed to your success in trading?
So the strategies I was learning when stocks within a certain sector were mispriced relative to each other. So I would get to identify like which stocks in a particular sector, like say it was the energy sector or the green energy, .com, whatever. I would get to notice which companies were the leaders, which one were the laggards, and notice when one company started to make its move, and then you'd have a number of days before the other company started their move. So comparing and contrasting companies within the same sector is what made a difference.
So I imagine that, of course, you went through a lot of ups and downs in trading. And I think that's a lot of what people don't hear as much is they hear about all these traders who do really well, but maybe they're not getting the full picture of what it took to get there or the many, many times when they lost a lot of money. And yes. Maybe you can share a little bit about that.
Yes. A common mistake that a lot of traders make, I mean, being human, I mean, it's part of psychology really, is thinking that, especially after you've had some profitable trades go in your favor, even more so if you've had some big profitable trades, especially early on, as you begin to overvalue yourself, you begin to think that, you've got this down. And then the regrets that you have are regrets of not going in bigger. And so then that it creates early big successes, create the problem of going in big later on and not being cognizant of the risks that you're about to take, and maybe even using margin, using debt to lever up on a trade. One of the biggest issues I found, it was not being humble, and big losses can be often connected to inflexibility of the mind, unwillingness to change your mind quickly and get out. Because a lot of people, they get married to a stock and they say, oh, it's going to go up, even higher and higher, and greed sets in. And then the cycle of when the stock starts to fall, they say, oh, I'll sell it once it goes back to that level, or once it goes back to that level. And frequently it never gets back to that level. And they end up taking a round trip on a lot of their trades and even getting into losses. So mental flexibility is one of the biggest lessons that I learned.
And how do you improve your mental flexibility? How did you do that?
Having a determination and understanding, like a trading plan, you could say, whether it's written down or mental, that you will get out of your position once it falls a certain percentage from when you bought it, or if it hasn't moved, above your price within a certain period of time.
Can that also mean being able to adjust to the situation?
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. Because we all have grandiose ideas on how big this stock is going to make it, or how much this trade is going to make you. That's normal. So yeah, being able to deal with our own greed and fear is one of the biggest challenges out there.
Trading psychology and the mindset. I mean, how much of that contributed to your success in trading?
Yes, it definitely played a role, because when you know you have experience and you go back to your previous losses and you start entering in a position, and you have to check your greed at the door, so to speak. You have to be disciplined to scale into the trade. Don't go all in on any one trade ever. Try to balance out, you know, maybe a short position with a long position. Be very adaptable. And as humans, we don't like to be told, we don't like to be reminded that we make mistakes or that we're wrong. And our ego is a big, our ego acts to block us in a way, from, the procedural steps necessary to become successful. I've seen it time and time again, not only for myself, I've seen it with friends who go all in. They think this is it. I've got the bottom now. Like, I had a friend who was very conservative. He never bought into the dot-com boom. And then March of 2000, when the stock started falling a lot, he said, oh, this is it. I'm convinced this is it. And he goes all in and uses margin. He spends his entire life savings. And a week later, he gets completely wiped out, all his savings gone. And that's based on ego. It was ego-driven trade, thinking that he knew it all. And he was picking the bottom and and I have other friends that happened to too. It's, yeah.
And these kind of things, it's not like you just learn in a textbook and then you, you're able to, apply it right away. I mean, it takes time to really develop that kind of mindset.
Exactly. Yes. Because one can intellectually understand something and they can take a coursework and they can study that and their mind can agree to it. It's, oh yeah, that's understandable. I understand this. So I'm ready to be successful now. But it's not until you get your emotions involved that your emotions can sabotage your, the discipline and the structures that you agreed to follow ahead of time. And because your emotions can overrule, your decision making. So, yeah, you have to live through it. That's why I feel paper trading is really kind of a waste of time, because unless you have skin in the game, there's no substitute for skin in the game.
Yeah, there's different opinions on that regarding paper trading, right? I mean, for me myself, I'm probably a bad example, but I've never really paper traded when I first started trading. I just went for it and I traded live so that I can feel the emotions. So then there's a lot of advice from people that you should paper trade. And I agree too. I think it's good to paper trade for the purpose of learning the mechanics of trading,
yes.
But knowing that it's not the full, you're not really having the full experience by paper trading. Like you said, you don't have the skin in the game, but then again, it may be good for different purposes, like, you know, learning the mechanics of trading and the technical side of trading.
Right.
You mentioned a little bit about trading plan, right? How important do you think it is to have a trading plan? And trading process as well.
A trading plan, a trading process. I would say at a minimum, it's very important of knowing how to cut your losers. That is probably the most important part. As far as when to get out of a stock, if it's in profit, that's another category, because you're already in the black at that point. Can be it's a different discussion. But the number one enemy for traders is being able to and willing to know when to get out of a position, because otherwise your ego and your fear is going to take over and it's going to rule you. So the trading plan is designed to protect you from yourself. The trading plan is designed and created when you're in a calm, rational state of mind. Mm-hmm. You use your reasoning and you create a plan before your emotions take over. And you have that as a reference guide to mm-hmm. go back to so that your emotions don't rule over you.
When do you kind of deviate from your trading plan? Because some people, they think that, you know, if you have a trading plan, you're going to follow it to the T. But should there be some degree of flexibility?
Yeah, I would say that the degree of flexibility is much more on the profit side than it is mm-hmm. on the losing side. So your trading plan, you may say, well, I'll sell once I get a double, for example. Mm-hmm. But as the trade unfolds, or as this process unfolds, you notice that other companies in that sector are moving much more than your company is, the company you've invested in. And they all tend to move, say, as a group generally, is that you make adjustments to your trading plan when you see that there's more upside potential there. And, you know, you can get into other details like the shape of the chart, you know, it's how rapidly is it moving up? Is it slowly trending up? And so that's where I think the biggest, where changes to the plan are most appropriate. Mm-hmm. It's most important to follow the trading plan when it comes to when your position starts to turn into a loss. That's mm-hmm. when you, because invariably most traders are going to say, oh, well, I'll just sell it once I break even on it. And then they ride it down for 20, 30, 40% loss or more, on the hope that it will get back to their purchase price. So that's follow that part of the trading plan religiously. Mm-hmm. As far as when to get out of a stock, that can be you can adjust that and be flexible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I also mentioned about a trading process. How big of a role did that play in your trading before? Did you have a trading process?
First, I don't get into any position unless I understand the other companies in that same sector, what's going on with the industry, mm-hmm. and see what's the trend of the industry. If the industry is continuing to down, you know, so I don't like to buy a stock in a steady downtrend, and I like to wait until it shows signs of a bottom and a rebound. That's why I look at all the companies within the sector. And so most of the time is actually spent on just doing research, just looking at being familiar with, so what's going on with the market, with this company, with the sector, and waiting for a catalyst. Mm-hmm. That's a key thing, is waiting for a catalyst, either up or down, to take a position. Overtrading is a big problem too, for a lot of people. They think, just because they found something, they think, oh, I have to buy it today. It's like, no, you don't have to buy it today. Yeah, maybe you take a position, but start off with very small positions and then scale your way into it. Let the position prove itself first. So mm-hmm. you add to winning positions and you cut short losing positions. So never go in. So if you say wanted to put $10,000 in a stock, start off, and you're not really not sure of where the direction is going to go, but you think it's a good company to invest in, start off with 1,000 and then wait till the stock starts to move up in a good trend line and maybe add more as you go in. So
that requires practicing a lot of patience.
Yes. Right?
Waiting part, waiting for the right moment, and having discipline, having self-discipline on waiting.
Yes.
And and doing your research. I mean, all of this mm-hmm. is part of having a trading process that I think is part of practice. I view trading as a practice, because I don't think any trader actually graduates from it. There's always something to learn, even after years and years of trading. Ian, do you feel like you are always learning something new?
Yes, I'm always learning something new, and let me say, it's not that I don't know these. It's not like I'm learning something totally new that I've never learned before, mm-hmm. but I'm almost having to relearn it because again, the ego takes over and it's easy to forget the lessons you've learned in the past, especially when things are going well. And it's easy to go back to old mistakes because your ego takes over and you say, oh, well, I've got it down now. I've refined and you'll come up with an amazing number of excuses to tell yourself what a great, you know, how well you're doing. And so people, it's easy to get sloppy. So yes, getting relearning that, which I've learned before, it's humbling, you know?
Yes, it is. And, I like to bring up the topic of yoga because you practice yoga. And so even just yoga, they use the word practice.
Right. It's a practice. It's getting your mind into a mental state free of disturbances from the mind, right? Where you get into a flow state, mm-hmm. where you're not ruled by your ego and your emotions, but you get into kind of like a type of bliss state. So by practice, it's a practice. It's like a discipline. It's a type mm-hmm. of discipline. You keep yourself on the straight and narrow and you follow certain practices, disciplined practices that help keep you out of trouble. And if you can just keep yourself out of trouble, the profits will take care of themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that analogy. And because I don't do yoga as much as I should, but, you know, practice, I think it's like a lifelong thing is practice. Practicing and learning is lifelong, right? Mm-hmm. And so how I think about that in trading is, like you mentioned, I mean, you sometimes you have to relearn things and you have to practice to get better. And even if you've maybe one day you did really well, like let's just mm-hmm. say in yoga, one mm-hmm. day in yoga, you can do the headstand mm-hmm. pose.
Right.
But it's not even the yoga gurus, they have their days where maybe the next week they just can't do the same thing again.
Exactly.
Because their body changes or right. something happens where they're not able to do that.
Exactly. So your key, like, in yoga and like in trading, and don't get married to the past of what you did or could do in the past. Each day is a fresh day.
So don't get married to it, but keep practice developing your mindset to be able to handle the ups and downs of trading because
yes,
it's part of trading. It will come.
Right.
Losses yes. will come. Gains will come.
Right. It's interesting because studies have been done on what kind of traders, who are the more successful type of traders. And it was commonly found in studies done that the successful traders very rarely, I mean, do they go all in on one company? They will have a mixed positions, you know, and have proper position sizing. For example, maybe they get into 10 different types of positions, some longs, maybe some shorts, but that they don't, they try to aim to get to first base instead of always swinging for a home run. Mm-hmm. They go for high probabilities instead of, you know, the big payout. It's all, you know, it's sexy to think about, oh yes, I bought a stock at $10 and it went to 100 or 1,000 or something like that. But in reality, the real successful traders concentrate on getting reliable returns consistently. And yes, many of them do lose money, but the thing is they keep their losses short, keep their losses small. So, another study was done is interesting. I read some years ago about how a group created a trading platform or a trading strategy because they had access to traders who lost a lot of money, and they identified some key characteristics of what happens to a trader just before they blow up their account, and how their mindset takes over, and they start doing things like revenge trading or trading much more rapidly, trading in bigger positions, thinking that, oh, they got to get back to where they were, because if only they just get back to where they were. So they take on these much bigger positions and riskier situations that they normally would never take on. Right. Mm-hmm. So so this group basically traded against that, whatever the risky traders were doing just before they blew up their account, and mm-hmm. they made a whole investment strategy of when risky trader goes long a particular stock, they will short that stock. Or if the risky trader goes short that stock, they will go long, do the opposite to generate good returns because of the common characteristics that are displayed right before an account gets blown up.
You've seen the headlines. Bonds are making a comeback. But if you've ever tried to invest in bonds, you know what a clunky, complicated, broken experience it can be. That's why at Public, they took fixed income and fixed it. Now you can find, evaluate, and buy thousands of bonds with an investing experience designed this century. They started at the beginning, reimagining the bond screener with an intuitive design that helps you zero in on the exact kinds of bonds you're looking for. Then they made it easier to evaluate each investment opportunity with better data in the places you need it most. Finally, they made investing in bonds as straightforward as stocks or any other asset. Add fixed income to your portfolio with corporate, treasury, and municipal bonds. Go to public.com/bondspodcast to get started. This podcast is sponsored by Public. Full disclosures can be found at public.com/bonds.
Are you a developing or seasoned day trader who trades the U.S. markets? Is the only thing stopping you from getting to the next level is having enough capital to trade? Trade the Pool is a unique online stock trading prop firm that funds stock traders worldwide. Not having to risk your own capital can help you focus on other things like making better decisions on your trades. There's no PDT rules to worry about. You got more than 12,000 stocks and ETFs to trade, long or short, and professional tools at your side. How you get funded is you show them your skills through a straightforward evaluation process. Once you pass the evaluation, you get funded and trade with their pool of money and split the profits. Don't let the lack of buying power, capital, or fear of losing your own money prevent you from taking your trading to the next level. Visit tradethepool.com/chat to learn more.
So it's pretty predictable of what they would do.
Yes, exactly. Certain patterns that they kind of, you say they lose control over themselves. And you know, it's an aspect, it's a frailty of human psychology, really.
So we talked a little bit about, your success in trading. Do you mind sharing a little bit about the losses that you faced?
Yes. Yes. They're all painful. We're all going to experience them at some point. Certainly had plenty of losses along the way. And, you know, one of the biggest ones that I had was back this company called KTEL International, and they sold music hits of the 70s and 80s. You know, get your CD, you order it online, and they actually had a website, right? So anyway, long story short is a quick look at the financials, saw that this company is a joke. And so I sold short the shares, expecting to profit from the fall in the stock. And things were going well. Shares were falling and falling and falling steadily over a period of a few months. And looking at the financials, I say this stock should go to zero. And so, but then they announced a deal with Microsoft to put their website logo on some as part of Microsoft's site, right? Just that alone, this is back in the dot-com days, sent the stock rocketing. It tripled in price in 15 minutes. And so I get to work and I'm horrified to see that my position, I'm way down on my position. And then I get a margin call from the broker. And then I had a little voice popped in my head from memories of reading a book called Market Wizards. And many of the traders in, these are successful traders throughout history, and they interviewed what mistakes they made and what they learned. And they shared is never answer a margin call. Always get out of your position if you get a margin call. Mm-hmm. So I was fighting between my greed of like, I know this is going to go down. I know this is going to go back down. And my fear of, oh my God, I got a margin call. I should do it. And I listened to my training, you could say, and I got out of the position and reluctantly, but I got out. And then literally the next day, they announced another deal with some other company to put their website logo on their company. In today's terms, it's a total fluff. It means almost nothing. Anyway, mm-hmm. The stock went back to its all-time high of around $40. You know, I tried shorting it then again, but there was no shares available to short. And I was correct in that it did end up going to zero. about a year later. It went bankrupt. Mm-hmm. So my prediction of long-term was mm-hmm. correct. It was go to zero. But if I didn't listen to the short-term indicators, if I hadn't listened to that, I would have been wiped out. Had I put in money to meet the margin call, to hold on the position, convinced that this stock was going to go down to zero, which it did, I would have had my entire account blow up because of a short-term situation that was beyond what I could have imagined, being willing to cut your losses. And that mm-hmm. saved my account, even though I was right in the long term.
Yeah, be willing to cut your losses. That's a challenging part, because we tend to, like you said, it has something to do with the ego too. And you're thinking, no, this is, or just denial of what's going on. And you just hang on to it. Greed played a big part in it. Mm-hmm. How do you overcome the greed? What helped you over the years to manage that? Or does it still come from time to time?
Oh, God, it comes all the time. I mean, the greed, it's a rush. It's like a drug hit, you know? I mean, it's hits the pleasure centers of the brain, and you feel so good. And you think that, you know, you're smarter than you are, and the greed will just set you up for future mistakes down the road if you don't learn how to control it, because mm-hmm. you will take on positions that are bigger than they should be, and getting into stocks that you probably shouldn't get into, not just stocks, but anything. I mean, this all applies to every stocks, commodities, crypto, you name it.
Mm-hmm. What would you say would be the biggest mindset related issue that you currently still maybe struggle with? Or maybe you're not struggling with any of those, but what do you think that is probably the biggest challenge that needs a lot more practice?
Over-enthusiasm about, I'm doing cryptocurrencies right now, and it's easy to get swept up in the mm-hmm. over-enthusiasm that, this is going to be the next big thing. And it is turning out to be a growing, a growing new financial system. But it reminds me quite a bit of the dot-com era, in that, yes, you had a lot of companies that come out that rocketed to the moon, and everybody thought this is going to transform everything. And the internet did transform us. But in the process, there were hundreds of companies that blew up, and we haven't seen that went bankrupt.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up cryptocurrency. Is this what you're into right now?
Yeah, I'm not doing as much trading as I am, you could say, more investing, because the crypto markets allow us to get involved with investing strategies that are not available to us in the regular stock market. So in the regular stock market, you have what's called market makers, and they facilitate trades when buyers and sellers come along to provide liquidity. Well, you can now, in the crypto markets, you and I and everybody can do the same thing, providing liquidity for traders every transaction. And so there's a lot of lucrative ways within cryptocurrency where you don't need to bet on the price direction of the cryptocurrency. You can just collect fees from every transaction fee that goes through. And so it's a great way to earn income at a level that is not available in the regular stock market.
That's an area that I think a lot of it's still kind of new territory. Well, not that new, but it's something that I'm curious about learning more about, and I'm sure a lot of traders are too. How did you transition into this?
I knew about cryptocurrencies long before I got into them, but I thought they were just, you know, just pure speculation on, okay, well, if I buy Bitcoin when it's low and then it goes up and I sell it and I can make money. And I said, well, and I asked myself, well, what's the difference between that and just buying stocks? So I never bothered to get in until I heard a great interview with a stock market guy named Jim Bianco. And he said, no, it goes way deeper than that. It's involving these things called smart contracts that allow decentralization, allow for transparency, and automation and efficiency. where we get to participate in a like a new type of financial system, you could say. So it goes much more, it's much more than just speculating on whether a coin will go up or down, but that we can generate yield by loaning out our coins, for example, to other traders, and we can collect some very, very good interest rate yields on them. And we can do what's called like being a market maker for these transactions, where we don't have to, again, we don't have to bet on whether coin's going up or down. We can facilitate transactions for both buying and selling, and for our willingness to deposit our coins into a pool, we collect transaction fees every minute. And the yearly annual yields on those are much, much higher than you could get in the regular stock market. So it's a new frontier. And the reason why a lot of people say, well, how can you get these, you know, like people ask, well, what kind of yields are we talking about? And I commonly see yields between 20% and 80% annualized paid out hourly. And they say, well, it sounds too good to be true. How is that possible? Mm-hmm. The reason why it's possible is because of the number of people that providing this liquidity is relatively small to the transaction volume of people buying and selling. So the bottom line is that institutions haven't yet gotten into this in a major way. It's still early on in the process. And so because it's early, we get to take advantage of a market that's relatively small. I mean, it's $1.8 trillion, the whole market cap of all the coins, approximately. But you compare that to $9 trillion worth of gold, you know, dozens and, I don't know, 30, 40 trillion or more in stock market capitalization, the bond market. And so it's relatively small compared to all the other areas. And so, yeah, we get to take advantage of being early.
It does sound too good to be true. You know, for I think a lot of people are still wishy-washy about it, not sure if they should get into it. And maybe that has a lot to do with just not understanding how it works yet. So can you go into a little bit more of what I think you mentioned, decentralized finance and yield farming. Can you just explain a little bit more about that?
Okay, so centralized finance is the finance that we know about. Banks, brokerages, houses, TD Ameritrade, Charles Schwab, Fidelity, those are centralized. You got to have your name and address and all that stuff, government tracked. Decentralized finance is anyone, anywhere in the world can create sites that offer trading opportunities, yield farming opportunities, liquidity opportunities that don't require, they're not regulated. They don't need to get permission to set it up. It's relatively inexpensive to create these, right? And it allows actors from all over the world to participate. So people can create sites that where you get to buy and sell stocks or mirrored assets, they call it. Mm-hmm. So let's just say the nature of the technology is such that there's a lot of innovation going on in the space on lending, on borrowing on what's called stable coins, coins that produce real tangible value in the real world. And I'm able, with my stable coins, which are always at a dollar, I'm able to generate yield on the coins that I deposit into the account. And I'm also able to buy products on Amazon.com. I'm able to buy gift cards from Whole Foods and Home Depot and a whole bunch of companies. So it's the cryptocurrency universe is transitioning into a new type of payment system that will make Western Union and Visa and MasterCard obsolete. So what Uber did to taxis, decentralized finance is going to do the same to centralized finance.
What kind of risks are there in this space that you're in now?
Oh, okay. So the risks, I mean, you have what's called smart contract risk, which doesn't happen too often, but it can happen. And people have been scammed out of their coins. Like they'll click on, receive a message from somebody, or they see it click on a link that says, oh, get your free this or your free that. And they click on it and they don't pay attention to what they're clicking on. And then they end up authorizing a transaction that is really going to a scammer. So there are risks in cryptocurrencies that do not exist in the regular stock market, because we're not used to being, you know, we're unprepared for these kind of risks, because when we log into our trading platform, our stock trading platform, we don't have these kind of risks. They've been engineered out of them. So that's the biggest risks are from, you could say, kind of carelessness and being too trusting. Another risk for the cryptocurrency markets, because it's so new, governments around the world, but especially the US government, is trying to get a grasp on what kind of regulations they need to apply to this. And you have factions, you have the pro cryptocurrency faction, you have the anti cryptocurrency faction within governments, and they're battling it out. And they're pretty extreme on both ends, and they're trying to come to some sort of compromise. And that is, in my view, the 800-pound gorilla. That's due to be solved this year from Biden's executive order that gives agencies 180 days to come up with a plan. So we should have this hopefully mostly done and wrapped up this year. But we don't know what the shape of the regulations are going to take place. So I definitely have to say that is a risk factor.
Mm-hmm. So let's just say that does happen. Regulations come in. What does that do to traders or people in the crypto market?
Well, what it could do is it may restrict people to trading only certain types of cryptocurrencies only on the centralized exchanges, that you had to give up your name and your phone number and your social security number to get an account created. So there may be those kind of restrictions. So those yield opportunities that I was mentioning earlier, those may be heavily restricted or blocked in some ways. Now there's technological limitations on what they can do, because this is not like, this is the cryptocurrencies are all over the world. So it's not like one government can control everything, but they can definitely make life more difficult for us. So it's kind of we'll wait and see what comes out of these regulations.
Another thing is, what kind of edge do you need for this type of market? Is it just being there at the right time, getting in early, or is it more than that?
The edge would be if you can see where a particular protocol has real use cases, like how is it being adopted? Because this is an adoption, parts of the cryptocurrency universe are being adopted in the real world, designed to, you know, replace Western Union, Visa, MasterCard. So the edge would be, you're just simply going to have to invest the time to see the new opportunities coming out, because there's a lot. This space is changing so rapidly. It's not like in the stock market where a company has to go through a fairly long IPO process, and then you have all these documents, and it takes time. And the stock market is much more matured, obviously, because it has over 100 years of trading history. Whereas the crypto markets, it is a little bit like the wild, wild west in a very exciting way, full of risks and great opportunities. There's something for everyone. Mm-hmm. The cryptocurrency universe can be very conservative, moderate risk, or super high risk. So you get to pick which area that you want to focus in on. So there's something here for everyone.
You know, I really appreciate you taking the time to share a little bit about what you're into now, which is in the crypto markets. What advice would you give to someone new in the crypto markets, and what's the best way to learn about it?
The best way to learn about it is to get on YouTube and just type the word crypto. And I learned so much. There's people who have a lot of different channels that they come out with videos every day, every few days, and they'll go through the different protocols and show you the pros and the cons and how much you can earn from each of them. And I've learned tremendous amount from these videos, because these people, it's like they eat, sleep, drink this stuff 24/7. And so it's a big time saver to watch these videos.
That's great to know. YouTube is amazing. Mm-hmm. You can learn everything on there. Regarding the mindset and, you know, the trading psychology behind trading stocks or options, forex, futures, and crypto, especially with crypto now, it's just a totally, almost like a totally different world, because it's still very new to many people. What would you say about the mindset that's necessary for that type of trading?
Yes, I would say go into this market, understand that many of the coins that are available today may not exist 10 years from now. Just like during the dot-com boom days, many of the companies that were available to purchase in were no longer around 5-10 years in the future. So the mindset is stick with well-known quality names, you could say like blue chip names, and being willing to have flexibility of mind, being willing to sell your position if the position does not move in your favor within a certain time period. It's like having to regulate yourself from marrying any particular coin, or whether stock or what have you. Because even though the company may be good or the coin may be good and they may survive long term, Amazon is a perfect example of this. Amazon went to dizzying heights during the dot-com boom, rose, rocketed to the moon, and then it came crashing down, fell over 80%, fell as low as $5 a share back in 2002. $5 a share. And then here we are at, you know, multiple thousands of dollars per share. So that can happen with crypto too. So no matter how good it sounds, is have flexibility of mind, no matter what position you're in, being willing to get out, and maybe you come back in months later. But flexibility, preserving your capital is the most important rule.
Yes, preserving your capital is probably the most important thing. Well, there's a lot of important things, but that is super important as well. Preserving your capital so that you can still be in the game to continue trading and learning and improving.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Ian, for taking the time to sharing your trading journey and a little bit about what you're into now with the crypto markets, and also just adding your perspective and insight on the mindset and trading psychology behind all these types of trading. So anyway, I really appreciate it again for you to be here with us.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. Happy to share.
Thank you.
You've reached the end of this episode of Chat with Traders, but rest assured, there are more episodes loaded with real market insight and zero hype on the way soon. So to stay updated with each great new release, subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and we'd love it if you'd leave a rating and review. We'll catch you next time on Chat with Traders.